Well, good morning and welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYM and Radio. 1080 on your AM dial and, of course, 95.1 FM. Congratulations to those that are winning all the goodies from KYMN Radio on this happy Valentine's Day. I heard on the KYMN News with Terry Knight about what the street department and police department are doing about all the snow. And what's really funny, I was coming into town from the south on 246 or Division Street, if you will, and I always take a right and go east on Woodley and then take a left on Washington and go down to 2nd Street. But this morning, as Terry was giving the news about the snow removal, here were two huge semi-trucks and another huge machine that was gathering all the snow and putting them in this huge truck. And I don't know where they went to put that snow, but I had to go back to Division Street to get to work today. And it's nice to be able to park right in front of the studios. They removed all that snow. So thank you to the Northfield Street Department for your hard work. Well, I do have a guest here today, and it's going to be an interesting conversation. A young woman that will be speaking at the Rotary Club today, and I'm going to introduce you to her. I have her microphone on, and her name is Lauren Haupt. Did I say it right, Lauren?
Yes, you did.
Okay.
Lauren Haupt.
And I want to say thank you to my friend over here and say hello to Geta and Yogi Repman. Worked out a deal to have her be the speaker today at the Rotary Club. She's an author, and why don't you give the introduction, and we'll get into the interview with Lauren.
Moin, moin, Wayne. It's a pleasure and a privilege. Geta, especially Geta, was looking forward. Geta loves the pitch of your voice and your show. Thank you for having us on a short notice again. Yes, this is a truly amazing, fascinating story. Lauren Haupt, the German for capital for your head, was born and raised north of Munich in Augsburg. And her biological father, American GI, left the country, ran away. And as she is good-looking, attractive, charming, her mother was good-looking, attractive, and another GI had fallen in love with her mom. And when Lauren was 13 years old, they moved to Ohio. He was a GI, Korean War and Vietnam War, and lived in America, but her adopted father was not super, super nice to her. Lauren will go later into details. So she ran away with 14 years, and Jack Kerouac on the road went west hitchhiking as a young woman, already American. She spoke American so well that she had to translate for her German mom and so on. And long and behold, she ended up in Orange County, Santa Ana. And that's one of our favorite places because 3 years later in 1976, when I was hitchhiking the first time in the United States, I was treated very, very well by a family in Santa Ana. And just minutes ago, one of the four kids of that family text messaged us, and Geta and I got married in Las Vegas, Thanksgiving 1995, because of that Santa Ana friend. Well, that's the story of Lauren.
Well, we're going to have a great conversation, Lauren, and once again, use the mic real nice and close, and I want to say good morning.
Good morning.
I was waiting for this huge German accent, and it doesn't appear that you have a little bit of it, but not much, right?
That is correct. I speak fluent German and English. I have forgotten a lot of German because of living in America for so many years. And I speak a very old dialect called Schwäbisch. It's a Bavarian dialect, Austrian influx.
Wow. Sounds good. I know you're speaking at the Rotary Club today about a book that you wrote about a miracle at Dachau. Did I pronounce that right?
Dachau.
Dachau. All right. And that's going to be fascinating. And, of course, we want to promote the book.
Thank you.
And get all the in-depth of this. But in this conversation, what I usually do, the beginning of our conversation, what are you doing now? And then I go back and we start with where were you born and bring you right up to 2019 already.
Oh, wow.
All right. So we're going to get, if I get too personal, let me know. All right?
Okay.
Okay. Hi.
Hi.
We're starting right now. Let's talk about this book, A Miracle at Dachau. My Opa's Story. Now, Opa is a grandfather in German?
Correct.
Okay. And there are some people that have grandparents that they call Opa or Papa or whatever. And your grandfather got very involved in the era of the Second World War. 1933, I think he got picked up and sent to a concentration camp. Is that correct?
Yes. My grandfather was French. He was raised up in Metz, France. He spoke no German. His father was wounded in World War I, so they moved to Bavaria for better climate. He already had an aunt and uncle living in the old German Royal Barracks, Air Force Barracks, there in Gablingen, which is outside of Augsburg. He met my grandmother, fell in love, had a couple little girls. At that point, they moved to the country to where her mother lived. And he would, like most common folk, they worked in the coal mines up in Essen. So he would get together with his brother, his cousin, and a friend, and they would take the train to Essen, and they would work during the week, and they would come home. One day, once he moved to the country, he would walk the train track to meet up with everybody at the train station. One day he was walking the track, and the fog was very dense that morning. But as he was very familiar with the location, he knew that across the creek was a house on a hill. Though the fog was thick, he could still see embers, and then eventually, once he could hear the trickle of the water on the creek, he could see flames. He knew there was a house up there, so he went towards the house, and then he heard a woman screaming. A woman was standing in the window, holding her child, seemingly lifeless, in her arms, and the house was falling down around her, burning down around her. The up floor, the upstairs, was engulfed in flames, and she would have surely perished. So he saved their life. About 3 weeks later, he's walking the track, and there's a German auxiliary police officer standing there. He did not know what he wanted, so he approached the man. And as he got there, got closer, he saw who he was. And the man was the woman's husband, the father of the child. He was there to meet my grandfather and thank him for saving his family's life. As he did not know his name, he just knew that he walked the track. So they became very good friends.
What year was this?
This would have been in 19, probably 31 or 32.
Okay.
So time goes on, and then all of a sudden the German Workers Social Party came into effect. It was affecting the labor unions and, of course, all the common folk in Germany that was already a distressed country in a depression. There was a lot of desperate people. So they started listening to speeches, Hitler's speeches, on the radio, and they became very worried and offended. He knew that this was going to be a crisis and not good for his family nor his homeland. So they formed an opposition group. Him, his cousin, his friend, and the husband's name, his good friend, his name was Karl Klemm. Well, one day they came back from working in the mines, sitting in the guest house, having a beer, and they heard a commotion outside. So they go outside to investigate, and they observe the brown shirts, the SS, coming through the village and hanging Nazi banners all throughout the village and including on the church. Well, this was very disturbing to them, and they could foresee the carnage that was ahead. Well, that night, the group, his little group, which there were many around Bavaria, there was many, many people trying to fight and oppose Hitler and his regime. So anyways, they took the banners down, and they hung up communist flags, just for defiance of Hitler because of his fear of communism. Well, the Nazis came through the village, discovered that the banners were down, and started knocking door to door. The friend gave them up. He was a coward, and he gave them up. So they got put in concentration camp. They were arrested. He did not give up his friend, Karl Klemm. So he's in Dachau. He was under the rule of Theodor Eicke and Wakerly, the warden, which a lot of people, if they read their history, Hitler's friends, his thugs, they were actually taking out of an insane asylum for the criminally insane. So these guys were totally unleashed to these sadistic savages, which actually they were devil worshippers belonging to a cult called the Black Sun. So you can imagine what these poor men went through. In my book, I include that there were gypsies, there were priests, and the 12 men, the 12 Jewish men that lived in Dachau, they were all put into the camp. So my grandfather's sentence was indefinite.
Go ahead. If you want to clear your throat, there's your coffee.
Thank
Go
you.
Ahead and do that. While you're doing that, I'm going to talk about a place in Northfield called the QB, the Quarterback Club, and I like to get people to comment on the Quarterback Club if they've ever been there. Yogi, have you ever been to the QB, the Quarterback Club in Northfield?
Oh, a favorite place in town.
Really?
Since 1992, and the dessert, everything is to our liking, and when we entertain German friends, or we had a delegation from the Mayo Clinic with German healthcare CEOs, we use their wonderful food.
Yep, it's terrific. And they serve breakfast until 10 o'clock. And by the way, the morning crew, husband and wife team, Lori and Steve Eastrom, are the people that open up the Quarterback Club, and they do it every morning, and they've been doing it for over 40 years. And they went on vacation, and Dale said, wow, we miss these people. So they changed their opening hours from 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. while these people are on this well-deserved vacation. So it won't be until around March 2nd that they'll go back to the 6 o'clock hour. But you can get there and have breakfast till 10 o'clock every morning at the locally owned, locally operated QB, the Quarterback Club in Northfield.
Wayne, we lately have also sometimes a kind of conflict, Gitta and I. We love the American traditional food as an old hitchhiker from 1976. But also, next door now here to your radio station, Carlo, the happy close friend Maria, her lunch and so on is special too. It's
you get a free meal out of this.
I hope. That's why the next 2 hours I will have a monologue. No, Mariah did the food for our conference, so we know her very well. And both places are best. Our right. German friends can't speak highly enough.
Okay, thank you. Our guest this morning on the Wayne Eddy Affair is an author. The name of her book is A Miracle at Dachau. And we're talking about her grandfather who was put into this concentration camp. And what confuses me is this, Lauren, right?
Yes.
I was going to say Lori, but that's happened yeah. before, haven't it?
And that's okay.
Now, when I think of Dachau, I think of Jewish people and others, gypsies, being put in that camp during the Second World War, and that it was also an encampment for captured individuals, etc. But you're talking about Dachau before the war started.
Yes, this occurred before the war started. A lot of people are unaware of these folks that were put in there in the very beginning. So they suffered the atrocities of Hitler and his officers.
I thought you said thugs before, and I'd have to agree with
you. They were thugs.
Yeah. Now, did you have a laptop conversation? By that, I mean, did you have a relationship with your grandfather?
My grandfather was a very special man. He is a man that I have admired and loved my entire life. As a child growing up in a German family, you hear stories at a whim of heroics and, of course, hardships. And I did not know about this particular story until I went to visit my aunt in Texas. She's the eldest child of Johann, Simon Johann, and Magdalena Haupt. And we were talking about things, and she disclosed this story to me, which I was amazed. I knew of my grandfather and my grandmother as just these most wonderful, kindest, loving people, and a very happy man. You would have never known that he suffered these atrocities. He never recovered from the starvation and the torture and the beatings that he endured during his time spent in the prison camp. He was always sickly. But you would have never known this. And when she told me the miracle of how he actually got out of this concentration camp, I had to write about it. And I also had to write about the people that were put in there in the beginning that most folks think came on later on. But all these good men deserve tribute.
And for people, once again, I always let people know whom I'm speaking to and what the subject did. And my guest this morning is author Lauren Haupt. And your grandfather was thrown in the Dachau because he took down the swastika flags and put up flags for what?
Communism.
Communism, okay. And, of course, the greatest thing that Hitler wanted was to be able to take over Russia.
Yes.
And so now he's in this camp, and through conversations with your relatives, et cetera, once again, you didn't have a personal history of being with him at all?
With my grandfather?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Okay. You're telling the story, and I'm just already excited. I want to know if you got to meet this guy, your grandfather, and talk to him.
Oh, yes.
So, okay, continue with your story.
Okay. So his sentence was indefinite. He was arrested. They were arrested, and his sentence was indefinite. He wasn't for certain that one of his friends had turned them all in, you know, causing them this imprisonment. So he's there about a year, and he's knocking on death's door. The only thing he had left was his faith. There was no hope, or he felt like he had no hope. And then one day a miracle occurred.
Okay. Okay, so now he's in this camp. He's being beaten. He's being tortured.
Starved because he
did not want Hitler in power and was an underground communist, which Russia was communist. So when he's in Dachau, we're getting to that exciting part. How did he survive in detail and get out?
Well, the only reason that he put up the communist flags was just in pure defiance. He was there a year. Of course, the camaraderies, the friends that he met, and the loyalties thereof is part of his survival. They would make these guys stand in roll call for hours on end just to suffer, to torture them. And if you were an old man and you peed yourself, you were beaten with a ox whip or with a rifle butt. As the time went on, every day there were train loads of these men from around Europe, predominantly Austria and Germany, being imprisoned. So the overcrowding started then on. In the beginning, he did hard labor on the road, building the roads. If you were too sickly or too weak, you were annihilated. You were no more use to Hitler. And if you could not ransom your way out of the camp, you were annihilated. So if you had money or property that you could give the Nazis, you would be set free. If you did not, you endured the punishment or murdered. The overcrowding was very prominent. Body lice, of course, the starvation. He had a 6-foot tapeworm from eating a pork shank that he found in the garbage from one of the guards. He had tuberculosis, of course, the disease that comes with malnutrition. And he could no longer work on the road. He was just too weak. So they put those men into building the new barracks for overcrowding. So one day, they're in roll call, and they were expecting officers to come in to inspect the barracks. Well, the warden, Wakerly, pulls up with an officer, and the officer gets out, and he inspects the prisoners. My grandfather, Opa, Simon Haupt, was 3 rows back. As he went along to each individual, he stopped in front of Johann, and he asked him to look up at him. He didn't want to, so he asked him a second time. He ordered him to look up at him. So in fear of what he looked like, to be annihilated because he was no more use, he quickly looked back down. So the officer continues his, and he's coughing blood, he's got tuberculosis. So the officer continues his examinations of the prisoners in roll call. Well, he was very worried. So that night, sure enough, he was laying in his bunk, and the officer that inspected the prisoners and a guard and a Feldwebel. A Feldwebel is a prisoner, basically a rat, a snitch, that turned against the other prisoners for guard privileges, smoking cigarettes, food, so on and so forth. They wore the guard uniform. So he didn't respond. So his only surviving friend says to him, "Johann, please, please get up." He did not respond. So the officer walks over to his bunk. He sends the guard and the Feldwebel to guard the door of the barracks so no one could escape. He walks over there and he orders him to sit up. He does not. He's just so weak, he's literally knocking on death's door. Again, his only surviving friend, Peter, he says, "Please, please sit up." So he does. He sits at the edge of his bunk, and the officer again orders him to look up at him. Fear of what he looks like and what the consequences would be thereof, he does. He looks up. And the friend says to him, excuse me, the officer says to him, "Johann, it's me. It's Carl." It was the husband of the woman that he saved their life.
Oh, for gosh sakes.
And that's how he got out. That is the miracle of at Dachau.
And we will continue with this conversation after a brief break, all right?
Thank you.
All right. You're listening to the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio, Northfield, Minnesota. And our guest this morning is Lauren Haupt, and we're talking about her grandfather and about a book written about her grandfather, or Opa, A Miracle at Dachau. We'll come right back and talk more about that right after these important messages.
Hi, I'm Angie Taylor, Director of Life Enrichment at Three Links Care Center in Northfield. We offer daily activities at each of our facilities, including independent senior living, assisted living, care center, and memory care. The activities range from exercise classes to sing-alongs, games to gardening, from bus rides in the countryside to painting fine art. Activities are personalized for the individual. Please call Three Links at 664-8800 or find out more at threelinks.org.
Monster Jam, where it's winner takes all. No guts, no glory. Witness the best of the best. See Gravedigger, Max D, Megalodon, and more of your favorite Monster Jam trucks. This is Monster Jam. Presented by official partners America's Best Contacts and Eyeglasses, BKT Tires, and Metro by T-Mobile. Tickets on sale now. Experience adrenaline-charged family entertainment. Lock in your seats today at MonsterJam.com. Coming to U.S. Bank Stadium February 16th.
Hi, I'm Pam Fikencher, Senior Pastor at St. John's Lutheran Church in Northfield. We invite you to join us for beautiful, song-filled worship every Sunday at 8:30 and 10:45 a.m. We are located at 500 3rd Street West in Northfield. If you can't join us in person, you can listen to our broadcast at 8:30 a.m. every Sunday on KYMN Radio, 1080 a.m., or live online at kymnradio.net. Go to stjohnsnorthfield.org to see our full calendar of events. We hope to see you soon.
Can you name this tune, Lauren? This is right about the time you would have been about 18 years old, 17. Sound familiar?
Yes.
1976.
The problem is all inside your head, she said to me.
Don't you hate that when you know what
it
is?
I'm getting old.
Why is that?
I can't remember the name of the
Well, I hope you out, all right.
Okay.
50 Ways to Leave Your Lover.
That's the
50
title.
50 Ways to Leave Your Lover. There you go.
Paul Simon, 1976, number 7 for the entire year. What a morning. All these people walking around enjoying the weather. I can actually get to your car thanks to the city on top of it removing the snow. But let's get back to our very interesting guest this morning on Kim, Lauren Haupt. And she's talking about her grandfather, a miracle at Dachau. And we left it with him being very weak, having been beaten, having been starved, and he is resisting the Reich, the Third Reich, and these guards are harassing everybody, and he's defiant, and his buddy says, you got to look at the guard. He wants you to look him in the face. And so he finally gets up from his bunk, and he stands up and lifts up his head and looks right at a person, and that person is?
The officer that inspected him in roll call. The person is, the officer is Carl Clem. He is the husband of the woman and child that he saved when he saved their life in the burning house.
Oh, boy, what kind of reaction? Now, all this information is coming down from your parents and grandparents and others. You did a lot of research. So what happened?
Well, he took him to the infirmary, and his friend, his only surviving comrade, he took them both to the infirmary. They were there for about 30 days, and they were getting as well as possible. The damage had already been done to their bodies. So he got my grandfather a job as a ticket master at the railroad station. He got his friend into a German uniform and into Switzerland to set up safe houses. Carl Clem had the connections as a German officer, a Nazi, to get falsified papers to get people out of the country. So other comrades that he had that were able to ransom out also aided in this. They hid people in their homes. He took the risk of hiding people in his basement, getting them to the train station, and continuing his goal of opposing Hitler. So the only way that he could do it at that point was to free people. So he is a righteous Gentile, and he saved many people's lives. My book is told on a train ride. When I was a little girl, my favorite thing to do was to ride the train into the city with my grandfather and have ice cream.
The grandfather that just got out of Dachau?
Yes.
Okay.
So we would just have a good time. So I wanted to put my favorite time with my grandfather as the setting for my book. When we get on the train, sitting next to us is an elderly couple. They hear the whole story as they're taking the train ride to Augsburg with us as well. When we reach the city, the story is over, and my grandfather stands up as a gentleman to let the elderly couple step in front of him and exit the train before him. The man stops, the elderly man stops, and says, "Sir, I must thank you for what you did, for saving people's lives. You're a hero." And my grandfather told him, everybody that survived the concentration camps, World War II, they're all heroes. We're all heroes. So the gentleman says, "May I at least shake your hand?" So he extends his arm out to shake his hand. His sleeve rolls back and exposes a partial tattoo given to the Jewish people at the concentration camp.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's many, I can't believe that KYMN Radio has been around for 50-some years, but there was a professor at St. Olaf College who I did interview, but these are many years ago, and it wasn't a show, 2 hours, a 15-minute. And he was telling his story, and he was in the Norwegian underground. But he had been in a concentration camp and escaped, and he had the number tattooed on his arm. And when he showed that, I had heard about that, but I never saw that. And unfortunately, he has passed away, but what a story. And you're very fortunate that you have first-hand knowledge of what was going on through your grandfather, who, by way of connections, ultimately got out of there. And how long did he live after he got out of there?
He died in 1973.
Okay. And you were taking that train ride right about 1956 in that area, or maybe later?
No, the train ride is just to present the story.
Okay. Okay.
It's just for my plot.
A plot. Okay. Is this your first book?
It's my first published book, yes.
Okay. It's very nice. Very
Thank
good
you.
Looking. And you even have, I haven't read it yet, but I glanced at the back and I noticed that it's a nice picture.
Thank you.
Beautiful. And I noticed you gave thanks to Jeff and Terry. Acknowledgements. Terry and Jeff Knight for all their faith and encouragement. So you mean Jeff Johnson and
I do.
Terry
That's
Knight.
A mistake.
Yeah, I know. I made many of those. So, now we have that story, and you're going to be not lecturing, you're going to be a speaker at the Rotary Club this afternoon.
Yes.
And to basically tell them about the book. So, let's talk about you.
Okay.
All right. And what I do here is I ask where you were born.
I was born in Augsburg, Germany.
Where is that compared to Frankfurt?
South.
Okay.
Augsburg is close to about 50 kilometers or so from Munich, north of Munich, close to Augsburg, and about 100 kilometers from Italy. Very southern Germany.
Yeah, boy, oh boy. Do you have siblings? Or?
I do. I have a brother and I have a sister.
Who's the oldest?
I am.
Okay, then who's the next one?
My sister, Sandra.
Sandra, do you call her Sandy?
I do call her Sandy.
Okay.
She's dear to my heart.
How much younger is she than you?
A year and a half.
Okay. Is she in Northfield or around or anything?
No, she lives in Columbus, Ohio.
I know where that is. Okay. And who's your brother?
My brother is James Eggers.
James, all right. How much younger is he?
About 3 years.
Okay. So he's the baby of the family.
He's the baby.
And you got to babysit.
Something like that.
Yeah. And you were born in Augsburg?
Yes.
Okay. And so now when you're in, what is that like, the community? What did your father and mother do?
Well, I was born illegitimate. So I was raised with my grandparents in their home with my mother and aunts and uncles and siblings. Until my mother married James Eggers, an American soldier. And until that point, I...
So this is your half-brother?
Yes, these are my half-siblings.
I have a half-sister.
Nice.
Yeah, we just went through that ancestry DNA thing.
Yes.
And it came back, and it says people, you might... They don't make it like this is a fact. They say perhaps.
Correct.
And she's evidently, they only do let you know what other people did it, but they have to do it before, you know, let's, you know. And they have her listed as my first cousin, and she's my half sister or whatever you say. So I've been there. Okay. So then... How about Sandy? Is she also a half?
Yes, she is.
Okay. So what was that like as a little girl growing up? I mean, was that a big deal? You mentioned illegitimate. Nowadays, they don't use that word here in America. They ignore that.
Time went on.
Yeah.
Back then, though, it was... My mother endured a lot of shame, having an illegitimate child, especially... from an American. One of the reasons I would like to say that I wrote this book is because when my adopted father, we came to America when he went to Vietnam and twice when he went to Korea, and then he was stationed in Texas at one point.
He was a military person?
He was Army.
United States Army.
United States Army, 33 years.
Okay.
And now, I am very proud of that.
Did he come from Germany?
No, he comes from Kentucky.
Okay, so he was overseas. This is, are we talking about your biological father now?
No.
Okay, your adoptive daughter.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So he was an American soldier in Germany and had a relationship with your mother.
Correct.
And then he went back to America, and your mom is there with you, living with your grandparents.
Well, he actually adopted me.
Oh.
And so I also came back to America. But I want to say one of the other reasons that I wrote my story is because when we came to America as children...
How old were you?
Like around... the first time, probably around 3.
Okay.
And then the second time when he was in Korea, I think I was around 10, maybe 9 or 10.
Okay.
And then when he was in Vietnam, I was 12.
Okay. Was he an officer?
No, he was not. He was an enlisted man.
Did he have a special talent in the service?
Paratrooper.
Oh, he was...
101st Airborne.
Oh, wow, that's a big deal.
Yes, yeah. It is. Yes, it is.
Did he tell you any stories about Korea? That was pretty much just
no.
Okay, how about Vietnam?
Not talked about.
Is he still living?
No, he is not. He died in 1995.
Okay. And he just didn't want to talk about Vietnam?
No. He would sit and watch shows and documentaries, and he would cry, but he wouldn't talk about it.
Yeah. Well, that's... I work hard to find Vietnam veterans because it's good for them to talk about it. And my very close friend, a former roommate of mine who went off to Vietnam, he won't talk about it. He told me one story maybe 40 years ago, but his facial expression when I bring up Vietnam. Will you be my guest, Gary? And he said, you know what? I think I will. And I said, okay. So I got out my date book and said, well, what's going to be good for you on time? Well, he was in a contemplative way. And so you could see him in deep thought. And then he looked up and he says, I can't do it. So
I feel sorry for Vietnam veterans.
Yeah, everybody.
All veterans, yes.
But to have gone through Dachau, concentration camp, what a horrible thing. And
they were evil.
Good for you that good for your grandfather for being a resistor. It's
yes.
terrible. I'm reading
yes.
a book right now. It's called Seven Names, and it's about a North Korean girl, woman now, and what life was like in Korea, North Korea. Got it? And it's just almost like what Hitler was
Communist,
doing.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, statues and pictures everywhere. And you watch those old films, and you see the crowd of people when Hitler's speaking, and you think to yourself, I'll bet my grandpa, if he was in that crowd, wasn't cheering. Or, it's terrible.
Well, there was a lot of desperate people in Germany after World War I because of the Depression. And, you know, who's to say how anyone would react or feel for a hope? And that's what Hitler gave them, was a hope, was a promise. Of course, it was false, and they were all evil. Like I said, they belonged to a cult called the Black Sun, and they were devil worshippers. So you can't even imagine what these poor guys, these prisoners in the very beginning, went through. It was like Satan unleashed. You don't find many stories out there about these guys, and it just had to be known. Like I said, one of the reasons why I wrote this is because my experiences as a child, when I would come to America, we would be called Krauts or Nazis. My mother would sit and cry, lonely tears, no friendship, her whole entire family in Germany, and it just hurt my heart. And I couldn't understand why, because I knew what a wonderful family that I had, what great people, what beautiful people, and risked their own lives to help other folks, Jewish people and such, during the war. And I just didn't understand that. So I really, my ambition is to let the world know that not all Germans were bad people or murderers.
Well, I've learned that quite frequently with my good friend over here, Mr. I'm going to take a brief break and be back, all right?
Wunderbar, moin moin, Wayne.
Moin moin. Happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you.
Moin moin, Geta.
Yep. Happy Valentine's.
And that means hello or goodbye. Moin moin.
And cheers.
And cheers. Okay.
Most important.
All right. We are taking a break. We will be back in just a moment here on KYMN Radio. I have an author in studio, Lauren Haupt, and she's telling a story about her grandfather, a miracle at Dachau.
Be her hero this Valentine's Day with a gift from Russell Stover Chocolates. They specialize in fresh strawberries, hand-dipped in luscious chocolate, and packaged in beautiful red heart boxes. Russell Stover chocolate-covered strawberries are the most romantic Valentine's Day gift you can give. At Russell Stover, there are special gifts for every budget. Many gifts are buy two, get one free. Two for her, one for you. Choose Russell Stover chocolates. Everyone at Three Links Care Center in Millstream Commons would like to extend a very heartfelt congratulations to Kathy Olson, Executive Director of Millstream Commons and the well-deserved recipient of the Cal Michelle's Outstanding Leadership Award. This prestigious award is presented by Leading Age Minnesota to a leader whose impact is demonstrated through vision, servanthood, mentoring, and commitment to older adults. Qualities Kathy demonstrates daily, not only at Millstream Commons, but throughout the community. Congratulations, Kathy Olson, from everyone at Three Links and Millstream Commons. You have truly earned this honor.
Are you tired of that icky old shower, crumbling old tile, or outdated bathtub? Rebath can help in as little as one day. Rebath is locally owned and would be glad to meet with you for a free estimate. Call us today at 1-800-BATHTUB to turn that old bathroom into new.
Okay. Okay, you would have been, oh, let me turn that on. You would have been about 18, 19 years old.
Play that funky music, that, white boy.
Yeah.
A good dance song.
Yeah. Can you remember who did it?
Casey?
Yeah.
Pardon?
Was it Casey?
No.
No.
Play that funky music, white boy, as done by Wild Cherry.
Wow.
I forgot all about Wild Cherry.
Just forgotten. Great stuff.
Number five in all of 1976, when our country turned 200 years old.
Yes.
Well, let's get back. It's 12 minutes before 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio. Lauren Haupt is my guest this morning, thanks to my good friend Yogi Repman. Yogi.
Thank you, Wayne. As a historian and so on, it is fascinating to hear about Lauren's grandfather, Opa, from France, falling in love with a charming German lady, getting married, kids, living in Germany. And then she stressed, and that's a key information here of the whole message of the book, A Miracle at Dachau, My Opa Story. Her French grandpa in Germany was a communist. Well, what does it mean? Exactly nearly to this day, 100 years ago, 1919, Germany, after the First World War, started a first attempt to have a democratic country, a republic. What happened? The First World War was lost. The German emperor ran into exile to the Netherlands. And in Germany, a party system, similar like today, was kind of introduced. There were already roots. And in the spectrum of political parties, there was also a major communist party. There was a conservative party like the Republicans. There was a democratic party like what we would call the Social Democrats, which are in a coalition right now in power. Well, 100 years ago, after the monarchy of the German emperor, a constitution was written in a smaller town south of Berlin called Weimar, where the German Shakespeare's Goethe and Schiller had lived. In the National Theater of Weimar in 1919, 100 years ago, the constitution was written because there was too much upheaval demonstrations in Berlin. So part of that party system of the first German Weimar Republic, as we call it, was a major party run by the communists. And when Hitler came into power, the only brave people really fighting, resisting Hitler after he was in power in January 1933 were partly leaders of the trade union system, some Catholic priest, confessional church, social democrats, and communists. So the communistic party was on the very left, Hitler was on the very right, and when Hitler came into power, he stopped the party system.
Amazing. Just simply amazing how that one individual could do what he did. And who can admire Hitler? You can't. Except you got to accept the fact that that guy really didn't know what he was doing ultimately. But I'm fascinated by it because the man was so wicked, and the people that he assigned the duties to do the torturing, all that had to be masochists or sadists rather, and I think there were 7 attempts to kill Hitler.
36
attempts, and that one bomb that went off on the desk. That's the one that
Stauffenberg.
Just a little, you know, people were killed, but he was safe because it didn't get placed under the desk. It got placed on the side, and he got out of there. But what a horrible man that he was. And here we are with the granddaughter of a gentleman that was put in Dachau, a concentration camp or a prison, because he took down the swastika flags.
Wayne and Lauren, literally, libraries had been written, and you started to talk with Lauren about it. And Lauren started mainly. How was it possible that Hitler came into power, that a very solid democratic constitution came into existence in August 1919, but the month before, after an election, a democratic parliament, which met south of Berlin in this city theater, German state theater of Weimar, had met, drafted that constitution, put it into action, and, well, the Roaring Twenties, Cabaret, Liza Minnelli, there was in good development, a wonderful development in Germany. And Lauren stressed then the depression after the Black Friday 1929, the crash of the stock market in New York. There were reasons. Then more and more, on the left and on the right, the communists and the Hitler Nazi Party, street fights, vicious street fights, many people died, police officers. Well, to make a long story short, Hitler came into power, and that is so fascinating that the very first concentration camp, which was founded days after Hitler came into power on January 30th, 1933, was Dachau near Munich. And before what we know as the Holocaust with the mass murdering, Germany's break of civilization, the worst crime in world history, the concentration camp like Dachau, and in those days in 1933-34, were mainly targeting persons like Lauren's grandfather, the communist who, for a little thing of taking the flag with the swastika down and putting up the communistic flag, were placed and tortured and in that Dachau concentration camp. Gypsies, minorities, everybody opposing Hitler. For example, round about 1,500 intellectuals, the best novelists, the best musicians, the best scientists, like Thomas Mann, who had 1929 the Literature Nobel Prize Award from Lübeck, our home state, Schleswig-Holstein, northeast of Hamburg. He went to Pacific Palisades with many, many others. It was a gigantic brain drain, sort of the democratic Germany in 1933. They had to leave in order to avoid being killed by Hitler in the concentration camps or wherever. And just as a nice little note, you know our close friend Eric Braden from Young and Restless, yeah, who came here in 2017 to our conference, partying. He is living next door to the villa of Thomas Mann, who came to Pacific Palisades. And because of having that Literature Nobel Prize, he was one of the very few Germans in exile in the 1930s, early 1940s, who had a lot of money. And his beautiful villa was just lately bought by the German government. So the German government transformed that Thomas Mann villa in Pacific Palisades, California, near Hollywood, into a kind of German cultural embassy. Americans meet German writers and so on. So that is part of the story. And I'm thankful that you have invited Lauren, the whole Holocaust, which is important, and you know how much Holocaust education we do, to extend the whole story, which is kind of told by Lauren.
Well, thank you for that insight on that. And Lauren, did you, as a young kid, growing up in Ohio, right?
No, I actually grew up in Germany. We only came to Ohio on a couple of occasions when my father went to Korea. He went to Korea twice.
Okay, well, what was life like in Germany? And how old were you? Are you an American citizen now?
Yes, I am. And I'm a naturalized citizen.
Because of your father?
Correct.
Right. And so how old were you when you came to live here permanently?
I was 14.
Okay. So let's talk about your life in Germany up to age 14. That's an interesting age to be when things are going one way and the other. So what was it like in your what we call grade school or elementary school?
It was wonderful.
You call them a gymnasium?
Yes. I went to American schools, but my life in Germany was with my German family on the German economy, and it was wonderful. Great food, lots of celebrations, big family, lots of cousins. I just couldn't believe when my aunt told me this story, because my grandfather was an amazing man. He was just so happy and so joyful. We would go Christmas Eve out into the forest and cut down the Tannenbaum, and we'd come home and put the candles on the tree, and he would dress up as Saint Nicholas, and sometimes he would dress in my grandmother's clothing as a bag lady to entertain us children, and he always came home with pockets full of candy. So that was a really good thing.
Yeah, I would imagine. But you never got to talk directly about his situation. You just learned it lately.
From my aunt a few years back, yeah. Yes.
And wouldn't you have been nice to know that when you...
Oh, I wish.
When you were sitting on his lap.
Yes,
as
I
a
wish.
Little girl. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, I remember the stories of, like, his... their feats of bravery, things that they did, but yes, I wish I could go back in time and with this knowledge and really talk to him. The concentration camp Dachau, in the beginning, it was the training grounds, the training for all the Nazis, for all of this evil, all of this wickedness, for all the concentration camps futuristically.
We are going to take a brief break. It's 10 o'clock, and you're listening to KYMN Radio, Northfield, Minnesota, 1080 on your AM dial, 95.1 FM on Northfield's downtown area. I'll tell you what we're going to do. I'm going to play the number one song in all of 1976, about the time my guest this morning would have graduated from high school. This was number one. We will be back in just three minutes and 34 seconds.
Loosen up that pretty French gown.
little bit of sunshine out there, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio. This morning is this morning, and I have a guest in studio that came here by way of Florida, and that is very interesting in itself alone. And I want to thank Yogi Rutman once again for getting connected and having this young woman come in and promote her book and talking about her grandpa. And I'm going to continue my interview, okay?
Please go ahead, Wayne.
Moin, moin.
Or, moin, moin.
Or whatever.
Moin, moin.
So, we were talking about when you were 14 years old and the life that you had and great things, and your grandpa that's in this book is the one that would have a pocket full of candy and just a wonderful gentleman, but never talked about being being in the concentration camp. Was that like a prison before it became a concentration camp?
No, it was actually an old ammunition factory.
Oh, okay.
Turned into barracks.
So now you're over there going to school and having a joyful time, and your stepfather is good to you and travels all over with the American U.S. Army, Korea, Vietnam, and so the military and war has kind of been your lifetime almost.
Yes, it has, and it's very intriguing to me because I respect all soldiers, all men that oppose or stand up for their rights and their beliefs, because that's what soldiers do. They fight for our freedom. They fight for our rights, regardless of what country it is. A soldier is a soldier. My grandfather was not a soldier, but he did stand up for the rights of humanity, his country, and his family.
You know, and during the First World War, the French and the Germans were fighting each other. I mean, hand-to-hand combat. And on Christmas, they put their weapons down and went and had a party with, this is one part of the First World War, and they had a party. And then Christmas is over, they go back to their trenches and start killing each other again. And you think about it, you know, how stupid war is and how...
Solves nothing.
I don't know. Just terrible.
It is terrible.
So was when you were 14 years old is when you came to America?
Yes.
Okay.
Permanently, so, yes.
To Ohio.
Yes.
And where in Ohio?
My father's family lived in a little town called Troy, which is 18 miles north of Dayton.
Okay. And you had to go to high school there.
Yes, I went to Miami East High School.
Miami?
Miami East.
Miami,
yes.
Ohio.
Miami County.
Miami County. There's a college or something that's Miami of Ohio.
Yes, there is. That's up in Piqua.
Yeah.
I believe it's in Piqua.
So did you enjoy Ohio? Was it an industrial way of living, you know, blue collar?
No, it was all cornfields.
Oh, okay. Not rubber plants?
No, it was all cornfields where they are.
Okay.
But famous, there's a lot of history there as well. But the thing about Ohio's a lovely state. I'm a country girl, so I enjoyed that part of it. I never got into the industrial part of it, but nice people, nice
so
friendly people.
So when you turn 18 and you're an adult, did you go out and experience life as a young, good-looking woman?
Unfortunately, I was married.
Really? At 18?
I was a child bride, yes.
Okay. Yeah, for gosh sakes. Well, just kind of almost like your mom.
Similar, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So did you enjoy life raising children when you're 18 years old?
It was difficult. A lot happened, but I devoted my life to being a mother and now a nana, which I am so happy about. I love being a mother, and I love being a nana even more.
Yeah, and And that's, I got a group of friends that are my age, and we all have grandchildren, and we all say, you know, if I only could have spent as much time with my child as I do my grandchild,
yes,
it would have been great. But yes, you're busy making a living.
And rearing them.
Yeah.
You can spoil your grandkids.
Amen, I say unto you. So, when you got, how many children do you have?
I have four children. I have James Fountain.
James is how old now?
He is 42. He lives in Seattle, Washington.
Okay, James is 42. And then after James?
Came Alicia, I-L-I-S-H-A.
Oh, wait a minute. I?
L.
Yeah.
I.
Yeah.
S-H-A. Alicia.
Where did you come up with that?
Well, her grandmother was three-quarters American Indian, and she looked like a little Indian princess to me when she was born. So I just sort of made that up.
Okay. Alicia, how old is Alicia now?
She is 40.
And she spends all her life telling people how to spell her name.
Yes.
And who's after Alicia?
That's John Douglas.
John, okay. Now, you're using very common names. And how old is John now?
John is 37.
37. And then the baby?
My baby is Billy.
Billy.
Billy's my baby, and he's 35.
Okay.
And he lives in Florida. Okay. My son John lives in Fargo, North Dakota.
Why is he over in Fargo?
He was working with my husband and I. We were working on the road, and we went to Fargo for sales, and he met a young lady and fell madly in love, and that's where he lives.
So I'm going to skip.
Love got him.
I'm going to skip way ahead now. What do you mean by working on the road?
My job is I sell travel memberships. And sometimes we will travel around the United States, and we go into conference rooms and hotels and sign people up for our club. Now, I currently am stationary working in Tampa, Florida at what we call a hard store for Condominium Travel Club. Great boss. Thanks, Patrick.
Is that, I remember when it was, you know, really, really popular. Is it still popular to buy time? Are you talking about buying time or actual building?
No, it's actually, it's not timeshare. It is a club membership. We are literally a member-based travel agency. People pay a one-time membership fee, which enables them for lifetime and perpetuity to buy wholesale travel at vendor pricing.
Oh.
Every aspect of travel. But you have a concierge, you have a travel agent at your fingertips, excuse me.
So let's say that I want to take my wife to, let's pick Frankfurt.
Okay.
So if we called you, you'd take care of everything.
Correct.
And all I'd have to do is show up with my ID and my ticket in both the plane and the hotel.
That's correct. I only do the sales end of it. Mm-hmm. I'm a podium speaker as well.
What's a podium speaker?
I stand in front of a room, and I do a PowerPoint and a sales presentation.
Okay. And do you have a gift for people that will attend one of those?
Yes. Predominantly free cruises.
Free cruises. All right.
It's a greed factor.
Greed. I was in Mexico. And in a very nice, or no, it was Cancun.
Yes.
And it was a very nice hotel. And we had people reach out and say, hey, we want to tell you all about, you know, having 2 weeks, blah, blah, blah. And we'll give you, they bought lunch and gave us
margaritas?
Yeah, okay. Blankets, those Mexican blankets,
oh, okay.
You know, the colorful things like that.
Yes.
And so you go, well, I don't want to take advantage of you. And, well, no, we're happy to give it to you. just come and listen to us. And if you want to get involved, fine. If not, fine.
Correct.
And I really have to say I respected them because it was an interesting presentation. I knew I couldn't afford it. And they weren't mad. They gave me that blanket and said, enjoy the rest of your vacation. Thank you for coming.
Yes.
You kind of do stuff like that at all?
We do the same thing. It's the same concept as timeshare, except that it's club. So timeshare, you buy a period of time, typically a week at a time. You pay a lot of money, but then you're going to pay a lot of money in maintenance fees. What I do, we eliminate the maintenance fees and still enable you to stay in beautiful condominiums all around the world.
Okay, so the condominiums then work with you, and they want you to fill a room for, you know, 9 months out of the year or whatever.
Well, actually, the developers only sell 49% of their inventory.
Okay.
They maintain 51%. So that they can keep control, of course,
uh-huh.
and raise your maintenance fees. There are 16 million weeks available unsold inventory every year. They make more money off the rental, the 51%, and we fall into that category. So we have unlimited use.
Well, that sounds like an exciting job. Do you have to spend a lot of time on the phone?
Oh, no, I'm not a phone person. I just do my podium presentation, my PowerPoint, and that's all I do.
Give me your PowerPoint. I want to hear your pitch. Let's take this brief break, and then we'll come back, and we'll talk with an author. We can't forget why you're in studio today. She has written a book. Laura Haupt is her name, A Miracle at Dachau. If you just tuned in, we'll touch on that some more, and she'll be speaking today at the Rotary Club. We'll take this break, and we'll be back in a flash on Kim, a friend you can count on.
Do you have an old junk or car in the garage or on the farm? Call Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300. Get the most cash for your old junker vehicle and have it taken away for free. Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300.
Don't let a dead battery leave you stranded this winter. When a warning light comes on, it may already be too late. Visit Witt Brothers Service, your Napa Auto Care Center, for a free battery check and make sure your battery is up to the challenge of a Minnesota winter. Need a replacement? Witt Brothers can make it easier on your wallet with a $25 Visa gift card by mail with the purchase of a Napa Legend or Napa Premium battery. Visit Witt Brothers Service at 701 Division Street in downtown Northfield for full details.
Your home, auto, and life are important to you. That's why the Northfield Insurance Agency works hard to provide you with the right protection. Kevin and Stan offer the products you need with the premier service you deserve. They carry business, auto, farm, homeowners, commercial, and bonds. Northfield Insurance is your independent agent, and they're connected with many insurance companies providing you with the lowest possible rates. That's the Northfield Insurance Agency.
Name this tune.
If You Leave Me Now.
Yeah. Okay, Yogi's talking. What?
Chicago.
Yes. It's a wonderful town, Chicago.
Wonderful
Chicago.
Group.
Sister city of Hamburg. Get us hometown.
What?
Sister city of Hamburg.
Oh.
And Hamburg is get us hometown.
Okay.
Lovely city.
Yeah.
They're from way up north. I'm from way down south.
So how did you two meet?
Because of Terry, your boss.
Yes.
Well, tell me more about that.
Well, Lauren knows the story.
I was working for a short period of time up there in Breezy Point, Minnesota, selling the timeshare there.
Okay.
And Terry and Jeff came in. Terry and Jeff came in, and we had a conversation. They were there on a little mini trip, a little vacation, and I told them my story. We had time, so I told them what my book was about and presented my story to them. And they were very intrigued and fascinated. And she invited me to do 15 minutes with the author.
Great show.
Yes.
And that's on Mondays at 11 o'clock on KYMN at Northfield, Minnesota. But you're living in Florida.
Yes, I went back to Florida. The only reason that I was working in Minnesota was because my son John, who lives in Fargo, His wife had two babies within 1 year, 10 months apart.
Oh boy.
She was pregnant again and had another one.
Hello, diapers.
So I was just I came to help. I just came to help.
Well, now for this particular day, Valentine's Day, by the way, you'll be speaking with at the Rotary Club, and of course this interview, and you're from Florida.
Yes.
And you had met Jeff and Terry in Brainerd, or wherever you just said.
Breezy Point.
I've been there many times.
Pelican Lake.
Yeah. And so I'm trying to get to how did
She told me of Yogi.
Yeah.
And we had a conversation.
Okay. So you were telling her you got into their conversationalists, as you are.
Yes.
And so you just started talking, not selling.
Correct.
And then she said, I do a show called 15 with the Author.
Correct.
And I'd like to talk with you when your book comes out, blah, correct, blah, blah. And then she says, there's a guy in Northfield named Yogi Repman, who yes, is from Germany. Yes. And then she connected you two.
Yes.
And then Yogi, you invited her to come to Northfield, Minnesota to be on KYMN and at the Rotary Club.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much for thinking of us. I appreciate that. So you did this all by phone?
Well, phone and email and so on. No, it was on a short notice last week. Lauren didn't know that she will be in Northfield.
Okay, why not?
Well, because we started planning on Thursday.
Okay. That's pretty good.
Well, he so kindly fit me in because he invited me, but then this is a seasonal sales job because of the snowbirds that come to Florida. So that's our, I hate to say it, but that's our target.
Yeah. Well, I'm your target,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. You are.
My generation.
Correct. Well, because you have the time to travel.
Yeah.
So, I was in touch with him when Terry did my 15 Minutes with the Author, which actually my book wasn't even published. It wasn't even edited. She was just so fascinated by my story that she wanted to introduce me and help me out. And I told her, I kept in contact with her and let her be aware that once I was finished with my book and it was edited, that because she wanted to re-invite me. And I had my book launching last week, and I sent Yogi a text saying, hey, will you support me? And, of course, he said yes so kindly, and here we are.
Wonderful. Wunderbar. Is that how you say
it? Das ist sehr wunderbar.
Okay. All right. So we're talking, once again, if you just tuned in, thank you for that. Lauren Haupt, H-A-U-P-T, right?
Yes.
Haupt. Yes. Is my guest this morning, and she's the author of the book she was mentioning, A Miracle at Dachau. And I have a producer here in studio with me by the name of Yogi Repman. You have to make me put on my glasses.
A Miracle at Dachau, my yep, opa's story.
Yes.
This
a righteous Gentile and one of the first political prisoners of the Dachau concentration camp, Hitler, in the 30s. What a horrible story that was. But what a wonderful situation. And your grandfather must have been a schmoozer. You know what I mean when I say that? A
yes,
schmoozer? That's somebody that's smooth, and, well, like Yogi, you know. And so by his able to have people get involved in his life, ultimately they helped him get the hell out of the concentration camp.
Just by pure miracle. Miracle.
And you got to know him, and yes, and he was a real gentleman and never talked about it.
No.
So you got all the information from relatives and others that
from my Aunt Lisa.
That. Yeah. Did you ever,
the eldest child.
Did you ever get a chance to talk to his friend, Carl, or?
No.
Okay.
No. I set my book up for a sequel because I'd like to express how they saved people's lives, what my family went through, what German people went through during the war, the effects of the ravages of the war, a war-torn country, and how common folk survived and how they made it through, meaningly, especially my family. My grandfather continued with his support of the German people, the Jewish people, in doing what was right and opposing Hitler, only he did it in a different way. And he had Carl Clem's help. Like I said, they saved many, many people's lives. Unfortunately, Carl Clem came to a brutal end. He, one of the people that he helped get out of the country, lost his papers and was stopped in Austria on his way into Switzerland, and he gave him up. So he was arrested. He had Hitler's crest tattooed on his chest. They cut his throat and laid him on the steps of his family 1 week before liberation.
Wow. That's terrible.
Yes. But he saved many people's lives.
No, you said something that piqued my interest the last hour. And you were came over at what age, 14?
Yes.
Okay. And did people call you a Kraut?
Yes.
And what other names?
Nazi.
You know, at that age, kids are mean.
Yes. And even prior to that as well.
Yeah. But why would they do that in Ohio?
Well,
did you have a heavy accent?
No, I believe that just like what happens in most wars, just like the Vietnam War, it's one of my ambitions for my book is to let people know that through prejudice and hatred in people's hearts, there will never be world peace until we eliminate that, until we take that out of people's hearts and let them know. I wrote my book through history, through research, of course, my grandfather's story. But the reason I wanted to put in these other fellows that were political prisoners in the beginning is because it's not known to the world. And I believe that it should be known. So I put history into character form because anybody can write a textbook. Anybody can read a history book. But I felt like people should feel the history, feel a real life story, a real human story of human spirit. And hopefully take narrow-minded people and open up their hearts and their minds.
I understand that's great, and I wished everybody felt the same way.
Yes.
Worldwide, but
yes.
that'll never happen. But I'm just really amazed that that you were bullied and had people calling you nicknames associated with your German heritage. That was back in the early 70s.
And sooner in the late 60s as well when we would come to America. It's because there was a lot of American soldiers, families that lost loved ones or, you know, through the war that were killed. And, of course, killed by German soldiers. So it was just—it's just a prejudice. It's just a prejudice.
Is that fading away? I assume.
I
that.
Think so. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have never.
Except with the Jewish community.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
They so still hate Germans. Most of them.
So your heritage would be your mom's German.
Yes.
And did you ever have your DNA taken? Find out who you are and what.
I actually did.
I did, too. Tell me about yours.
Okay. I actually found my biological father about 4 months ago through Ancestry.com.
Wow.
Uh-huh. And I've been in touch with him and have somewhat of a little bit of a relationship with him.
Was he shocked?
Yeah. He's not used to giving out pink cigars at 90.
All right, that's it. That's yeah. A good one. I like
but
that.
But he's also got his like a rooster, you know. He's like pretty proud of himself, also,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I
I'm a dad at 90.
Yeah. So you is he ambulatory and mentally okay?
He is mentally sound. He's had some severe strokes.
Okay.
But he's of sound mind and body. He lives in Florida as well.
Oh.
And ironically, my father moved to Troy, Ohio when he retired. That's where my family lived, and my mother still lives up there. My biological father, all those years, lived 18 miles away down in Dayton.
Wow. Did you, as a kid, wonder?
Oh, I always wondered. You always know, especially when you can feel resentment and other issues. You always know.
What are other issues?
Resentment.
Okay. I'm kind of getting personal here, I suppose.
Oh, that's okay.
But I would imagine that his feelings you described was like, wow, I'm a father of a young, beautiful woman. And the next one is, oh, God, is she going to come here and ask me for money?
Right. I think I make more money than he does.
Yeah. Well, are you looking forward to visiting him? And he's not going to be around very long based on reality.
I do value the time that we have left. Finding my heritage, I also discovered that I'm an eighth of Shawnee American Indian.
Mm-hmm. What else?
Which is interesting.
What else are you?
I'm German and French.
Oh, French, all right.
Yes.
Mine came back, and I thought I was more French, but it comes back that I'm 42% Irish.
Oh.
Pretty good.
Yes, yes.
And 28% French, and
20, that's a high percentage.
Yeah. 26% English, Wales.
Okay. Well, that's mine came up Wales as well.
Yeah. And 2% American Native.
Isn't that something?
And I knew that I had some American Native blood in me, but my mother would talk about 1/32nd and 1/16th and 1/64th, and I've lost it and didn't know which one I was, but I was always very proud to be able to say that. It was
absolutely.
Sue.
Absolutely.
And of course, I'm not going to get any of that money I give them at Treasure Island.
No.
It's 10:31 on 1080 Radio. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and we'll continue our conversation with Lauren Haupt, and she is the author of A Miracle at Dachau, My Opa's Story.
The Craig Keller Insurance Agency in Nurse Strand would like to salute the area FFA members during National FFA Week. FFA is dedicated to making a positive difference in the lives of students by developing their potential for premier leadership, personal growth, and career success through agricultural education. For all your insurance needs, farm, home, auto, and commercial, contact the Craig Keller Insurance Agency in Nurse Strand.
Be her hero this Valentine's Day with a gift from Russell Stover Chocolates. They specialize in fresh strawberries hand-dipped in luscious chocolate and packaged in beautiful red heart boxes. Russell Stover chocolate-covered strawberries are the most romantic Valentine's Day gift you can give. At Russell Stover, there are special gifts for every budget. Many gifts are buy two, get one free. Two for her, one for you. Choose Russell Stover Chocolates.
Thinking. Name that tune.
You'd think that people would have had enough of
silly love song.
Yes. Who sings it? I'll give you his first name. No, I won't. It's a group called Wings.
Oh, Wings. Oh, you're bringing back so many good memories.
Well, that's the whole point. Good memories, you know. I'll tell you what, music and I want to say smells or odor, your olfactory, like a pie in the oven,
yes.
You know.
Yes.
You know, like, I don't know about you, but I like rutabagas.
Yes, I do too.
And when you cook them, the whole house smells like rutabagas.
Or a Limburger cheese, which I love.
Yeah, it just brings back pleasant memories.
Yes, it does. It really does. It does bring back a lot of good memories. That was my, in fact, I believe that those were the best years for music, for talent.
Yeah, those were the days, my friend, I thought they'd never end.
Yeah. Yes.
I want to know a little bit more, if I may, about the business that you're in. Do you enjoy giving these presentations? And number one, are you a little nervous when before? And then once you get there, you get comfortable? Or are you just a professional that doesn't even think about it and walk out on the stage or into the whatever? Tell me about that.
No, I have stage fright every day.
You do. All right. Tell me about that.
Well, I get nervous just until I start talking. And then I see the look in everybody's eyes and the excitement of travel. And what I present mostly in my podiums is families getting together, that they need to be together. There were two laws put on legislature and passed due to my diligence and my advocacy. I didn't like what was going on there in Florida concerning the elderly and the indigent, so I went to Tallahassee, to the state capitol, and I met with Tom Batchelor at that time, 1998, the House of Representatives, through the Med Waiver Program. There were people that were on very long waiting lists, 6 months to a year out, that were truly suffering. And because the lead agent didn't want to allocate any outside agencies to hoard all the Medicaid money, these folks were on these lists that needed help. So I was their advocate.
Help to find a place to live or help to get medical treatment?
My agency did not do health care. It was homemaking and companion care.
Okay.
And which is necessary. So it's preventative. It was intended so that people could stay out of nursing homes. They could stay at home and function and live on their own. Well, homemaking and companion care is very essential to that, to them being independent. If they needed a ride to the Social Security office or grocery shopping or cleaning their house, preparing meals, or just simply because they were lonely to prevent depression.
Well, there's a lot of fraud in that industry. And
yes.
When you went to Tallahassee, tell me the success you had or the failure or the presentation. Tell me all about that.
Well, due to this, now the folks that are on Medicaid, Medicare, they can choose any agency they want. They don't have to be subjected to just one agency, which is the lead agency, and be afraid to transfer to another company if they're not comfortable, which before I went to Tallahassee, they were unable to do that. They had to stick with the lead agent, whether they were happy or not. So now they have freedom. The laws were passed.
Did this happen because of your elderly parents?
No.
I mean, you're interested in helping like that?
I always kept my grandparents in mind.
Okay.
If it were them, what would I do?
Okay. And by the way, I don't want to give everything away in the book. Obviously, you'd like to have people read the book and
yes.
get all the details. And
yes, and I appreciate that.
Yeah. But I do have to ask a question, and that is, did your grandfather live here in America?
Never. He always lived in Bavaria, Germany, other than his upbringing until his adulthood in France. He was from Metz, France. He didn't even speak German at all. He served in the French army, actually.
So what happened when you found out about your biological father through what's it called?
Ancestry.com.
Yeah. And he's 90 years old, and we talked a little bit about that, but I wanted to continue on what was that like when you for example, I have a daughter we adopted, and my wife gave her and me and another kid for herself for ancestry. And my daughter was so excited about that because she's adopted. And so she's now chasing the names that, you know, that she found out what her nationality is. And it was pretty close to what we told her, but because of what we were told. And then my wife came back, and her ancestry thing totally ticked off when she saw the results of that test.
Why?
She's a Norwegian. 100% Norwegian, lutefisk and lefse and all of that.
She fits right in Minnesota.
Yeah, but she found out she's 10% Swedish.
Oh.
And I said, well, what's wrong with that? They had great meatballs, you know. So it was fun to do that, and I'm not going to chase anything because they kind of much too new. But they, as I mentioned before, they had my half sister as a cousin. 21 minutes before 11 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair at noon today, my guest will be speaking at the Rotary Club, and they meet at the Methodist Church here in town on the east side. And they have a wonderful room for presentations. Are you going to have a PowerPoint presentation at all?
Just my book.
Okay. And do you have your 20 minutes that they're going to give you all figured out and you get everything in there?
I did some notes, but I'm probably just going to ad-lib it.
Yeah, I think you're probably pretty good at that.
Thank you.
And of course, there'll be a question and answer period.
Yes.
And it will seem like, you know, when I go to their meetings occasionally, it seems like the speaker starts and it's over because, you know, it's so interesting. And
yes.
You're all of a sudden, well, and some people leave. Sometimes the speakers stick around and talk a little bit more one-on-one. So you should be. That is really amazing, though, how this connection, having you in my studio and going to the Rotary Club and knowing Terry and Jeff and Yogi and coming up from Florida. That's a big deal for us.
Well, I feel like God puts you where he wants you, and he puts the people in front of you that can guide you spiritually.
Now, you have four children, and you are a grandmother?
Yes, I am.
How many grandkids you got?
Name 11.
Them. Name them.
We'll start with Jade. Gianna.
Let's do this. I'll jot them down and see if you can name.
Remember them?
Yeah. And you don't have to give which daughter or son.
Okay.
There's Jade.
Then there's Mason.
Okay, we got Mason.
Gianna.
How?
J-I-A-N-N-A.
Gianna. Okay, got it.
And then there's Lily.
Lily. Got it.
Mina.
Nina.
Mina, with an M.
Mima.
Mina.
Okay. And then?
And then there's Zach.
Okay, I like these names. And after Zach, I had a horse I named Zach. Okay.
Then there's Dakota.
Whoa. That's
from North Dakota.
Okay, Dakota. Okay.
Keegan. Actually, Robert. His name is Robert. He was named after my husband, Robert.
Uh-huh. Keegan.
Well, they call him Keegan as a nickname, but his name is Robert.
Yep, I got it, Robert.
Then there is Serenity.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know how to spell that. Serenity. I'm going to just Serenity. Then after that.
Willow.
Gee whiz. Interesting.
And Brandon.
You got them all?
I got them all.
Okay. Wow.
Better count them.
Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Pretty neat names. Pretty neat names. Now, which one is your favorite?
All of them.
I once asked somebody that, and they actually said, oh, Billy, or whatever the name was. And I thought, oh, I shouldn't. You know.
Well, just like I tell all my children, each one individually, I will tell them, you're the apple of my eye.
Ah, for sure. So you raised these children in Ohio?
two in Ohio, two were raised in Ohio, and the other two, the two boys, John and Billy, were raised by me in Florida.
In Florida.
Yes.
Do you like Florida?
I love Florida. Love the South.
What town do you live in?
I live in a town called Homosassa.
You come up with some great names. Homosassa.
Homosassa, Florida. It is home of the manatee.
Oh, the manatee, that slow-moving, big, lovable, huggable.
Beautiful, docile
creature.
That
has all kinds of cuts on their back from...
Unfortunately.
Boats, yeah.
I wrote a book, a children's book for the manatee.
Oh, good. How'd that go?
It's a good story. This is my first publication.
Okay.
But I plan on having that published next.
Okay. You think that you're going to be a full-time writer?
A dream.
Okay. You think you could do a novel?
I would like to do a sequel to this book.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Will it be a novel, a story?
Yes.
Not a. This here is a kind of a biography, right, of your grandfather and what he went through.
It is a true story, and I just put history into character form so that folks could feel the characters.
All right, a true story. I like that. It's 15 minutes before 11 o'clock, and in studio right now, I have a woman by the name of Lauren Haupt, and she's here from Florida to be on the Wayne Eddy Affair, and then go over to the Northfield Rotary Club meeting at noon, and Yogi Rutman and Terry Knight put this all together, and it's a real pleasure. But I'd like to know a little bit more about why you were raising James and Lisa and John and Billy and all that. You had this, you're really a socialite, right? You're not social? No?
No.
Oh.
I'm a country girl.
Yeah, but if you get up and pitch the business you're in, you have to be social.
I don't know how that happened.
Oh.
I am social as far as I do love people, I love helping people, and I do feel like my job, the reason I feel like it helps people, because if there's a single parent that can't afford to take their child on summer vacation, they can. If there's an elderly couple that worked hard all their life, never got a chance to take a vacation and decide, hopefully one day when we retire, honey, I'm going to take you to Hawaii, they can afford to go with us. Because typically, because of the inflation and travel being marked up 300 to 500%, they can't do that. So I feel good about putting families together.
Have you ever been on a cruise?
No. I get sick.
What, you know, this town that you mentioned that you live, helped me out, because I've been to Fort Lauderdale, I've been to Miami, I've been to the Keys, and I've been to Newport Richey, and I've been to Disney World?
Orlando.
Yeah. So I've been around. I've never been to Tallahassee, though.
Homosassa is on the west coast.
Okay.
Of Florida, close to Newport Richey, actually.
Okay.
Beautiful rolling hills and farmland, and beautiful springs and rivers. And I'm a nature lover, so that's why I live there. I prefer nature.
How was the school system there for your children?
Very good.
Did you get involved in things?
I actually raised my children up in Gainesville.
Gainesville.
Go Gators.
Wasn't there a horrible murder in Gainesville?
Yes, Danny Rollins. He committed the Gainesville murders. He murdered 5 college students.
Yeah.
But it's also the home of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
Yeah, like people enjoy talking about their hometown. So
yes,
you lived several places in Florida and raised for 14 years in Germany.
Yes.
And you said that you can speak German fluently.
Pretty close. I have forgotten some, but I can definitely hold a conversation.
I admire people that have a second language. And I guess English is one of the hardest languages to learn. Tell me how you did that, transfer from speaking German all your young life and then coming here and being bullied because you had an accent and stuff?
Well, I didn't speak any English probably until around 5 or 6 years old. I started speaking English. And then I went to I went to American schools. So,
okay.
But of course, English was spoken in the home, English and German, because my mother, she predominantly spoke German when she spoke to me because.
Okay.
I was so German.
I just admire, like, Yogi can go off in German or English.
Yes.
And that's quite a feat.
Yes, I believe. They say German's a hard language to learn, but I don't get that. Mm-hmm. Now, the dialect that I speak is a very old, old dialect. It's one of the oldest dialects in Europe. A person that lives where Yogi and Geta are from, that's High German. I don't speak High German. So some of the dialects, some of the words are going to be different.
Yeah, I was having a conversation with somebody, and they said, well, just imagine if you're down in the deep part of the South, Tennessee. Now,
yes.
That person and you have the same language, but
yes.
They're different accents, and
correct.
And so I understand that.
Yes.
I speak two languages.
Oh.
I speak English
mm-hmm.
and Pig Latin.
Oh.
You ever speak Pig Latin?
I forgot all about Pig Latin, yeah.
That's what
that's
show,
a hard language to learn.
This show is all about memories, and we're going to take a brief break and come back and wrap up the Wayne Eddy Affair on this Valentine's Day.
2,000 fence posts, 900 acres, 48 bales, one trophy, all before lunch, which we caught last Saturday. There aren't enough hours in the day, so we work in the dark. The 9-5 here is 5-9. We earn our scars. We wear our work ethic. We work until the work's done. And when it is, a few hours of shut-eye to rest up for tomorrow, the day we'll finally get something done. The Can-Am Defender family of side-by-sides. We're built for this. Find the perfect Defender for your hard day's work at Leo South in Lakeville today.
The affordable one, the one you want at Leo South.
Hi, I'm Kathy Olson. If you've ever been to Millstream Commons, I'm guessing you've seen the jukebox, popcorn machine, cafe tables, and cozy booths that set the stage for fun in the room we call the Connection. This gathering place provides a spot for grandkids to dance, twist and sing, a place for friends and families to enjoy a carry-out pizza, and the perfect setting for relaxing chats, rousing card games, and interesting speakers. Whether it's a planned event or an impromptu gathering, the Connection lives up to its name. After all, it's the relationships we have and the connections we make with others that allows us to live, laugh, and learn.
That's the title. Number 3 in all of 1976. Two people, one woman, one man. You don't know it? That would be Elton John.
Elton John.
And Kiki D.
Oh.
We're back on KYMN Radio, Northfield, Minnesota. 8 minutes before 11 o'clock is the time. And today is February 14th, the year's 2019. And my guest on your radio station dial is Lauren Haupt. And she is an author. And she wrote a book called A Miracle at Dachau, My Opa's Story. It's quite fascinating. We've been talking about it in bits and pieces here this morning. And what I like about it is that this book, which where are they going to be available?
They are available on Amazon, Kindle, or paperback.
You're on Kindle?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
And paperback?
Yes.
Wow. This is a paperback?
Yes.
Okay. I have a Kindle.
Okay, yes.
And I can't, it's unbelievable how much, many books I read. And then they have, you know, you can search for a book in the way, what you're interested in, and I'll say, oh, that looked good, and I'll hit it, and they'll say, you already bought this. And I read a lot.
That's wonderful.
So I'm going to enjoy reading.
It's a good read.
Yeah. So
please write me a review.
Pardon me?
Write me a review, please.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, that's one thing I hate about Kindle, is that sometimes they won't let you get out of there when you finish a book until you give them at least 15 words.
Oh. You can just say one word. It's great.
No,
two words.
They won't let you. They won't
let
you go. No.
Oh.
And it will tell you you have 5 words to go, 4 words to go. Well,
wow.
I don't type. And so for me to do it hunt and peck, it's just a pain.
Well, you can actually go on the hard copy site for Kindle, for Amazon, and you don't have to do that. You can just write up a review. It can be 2 words if you want to.
Okay. I'll do that.
Thank
after
you.
After I read it.
Yes, thank you.
Because I don't want to say that something I haven't read.
Correct.
6 minutes before 11 o'clock. So what was the biggest thrill in your life besides your babies?
Writing this book.
Oh, wow. How long did that take you?
10 years.
10 years?
Yes. It was a very hard story to write. It was very emotional. I did a lot of crying to know that I would have to put it away, knowing what my grandfather went through. It was just heart-wrenching. It was just horrible.
How did he meet his demise?
From never recovering from the torture and the starvation and everything from the concentration camp. His body never recovered.
So he died in Ohio?
Oh, no. He was in Germany. He never left Germany.
Oh, okay. All right. Did you go to his funeral?
Yes.
Well, that's an expense. But
I was there.
We
were living in Germany at the time.
Okay. When people in Germany really admired and respected him because of how he helped other people,
yes,
et cetera. So at that particular moment, I don't know how funerals go in Germany, but did they have a lot of people at his funeral, his wake, or whatever you call it?
Yes, they did, and everybody from the train station that he worked with was there as well. All friends and family.
So that was a good send-off.
Yes, it was.
All right.
Very respectful.
All right. How do you like Northfield so far?
Oh, I love it, and I love Minnesota. I think Minnesota is wonderful, and the people are absolutely amazing and wonderful. It's beautiful, beautiful state. I like Minnesota very much. If I were to have a summer home, it would definitely be Minnesota.
No, you met Jeff and Terry at what?
Breezy Point.
Breezy Point. So how long did you have to make your presentation? A day, a week, a month?
With Terry and Jeff?
With the whole business that you were doing.
You have an hour. You're designated an hour and a half.
Once or twice or three times?
Depends on how many people show up, but I actually, in Florida, we usually have two to three presentations a day.
Okay. And, I was a salesman for KYMN Radio and had salesmen working for the station. And I was vice president of radio for Minnesota Broadcasters, so a lot of sales presentations. And some people are not cut out to be salespeople.
True.
They just don't have the ask.
True.
And people like yourself and perhaps me, it's, you knock on 10 doors and you hope one will be open. And that feeling is, it literally is a high.
It is. It really is. I love the challenge of sales. I love the competition. And I love winning.
Yeah. Winning. All right. You wear a red hat?
I don't know what that means.
Oh. Make America Great Again.
Oh, okay.
So I won't get into politics.
Okay.
So when you get over to the place that you're going to make a presentation in about an hour and 2 minutes, and do you have to set up, do you have film?
No, the only thing I have is my book.
Okay. So you're not going to point at stuff and,
no.
and say this. Well, no. I think it's going to be pretty exciting. Where are you staying?
We are at the Archer House.
Oh.
A lovely hotel. Lovely. Well, absolutely lovely.
Have they treated you well?
Very well. It's a very quaint, romantic little hotel. It was Yogi's suggestion, and it was a very good suggestion. I would return there.
Okay. Do you know the names of the people at the front desk?
No.
Okay. Well, my daughter works there.
Oh,
and
nice.
She is well-liked by the guests. And I
can see why.
I was just wondering if she's, working with you.
Well, we didn't arrive until about 1:30 in the morning.
Okay.
So I don't know who I met. I was just so tired, I just went straight up to the room.
Wow, 1:30.
And then
you had to get up for this thing here.
Yes.
Well, it was worth it, though, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And I want to thank all of your listeners, and I want to thank KYMN1 for having me. I appreciate it. I do hope that everybody out there listening will take a look at my book and enjoy it and feel the history.
Okay. Why don't you name the book and how they can get it again?
A Miracle at Dachau, My Opus Story, A Righteous Gentile and One of the First Political Prisoners of the Dachau Concentration Camp. It is available on Amazon, in Kindle, or hard copy. Thank you.
All right. Well, we're going to have to say goodbye and let you get ready for your meeting up at the Methodist Church. And we'll have to say to you, here's the deal. Thank you very much for coming today. Good luck on your book.
Thank you.
And I will read it, and I will make a comment.
Thank you.
And it sounds like it's going to be a fascinating story. We just touched on a few things, and I was just looking. It's almost 300 pages.
Yes.
Wow. And in good print, by the way.
Thank you.
I can read it without my glasses.
Thank you. And I appreciate, and I want to thank you also, Wayne.
Oh, you're
welcome. Thank you for having me.
Okay. This is the conclusion of the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN. Lauren Haupt, my guest this morning. Thank you for joining me. And now we're going to turn things over to others.